Like the show? Want to listen to episodes early? Consider becoming a patron. Starting at the $3 a month level, patrons get access to a custom patron-only feed where we put out episodes of upstairs studio podcasts like the Childcare Bar and Grill, Miss Becky's Classroom, That Early Childhood Nerd, the Renegade Rules podcast, and others early. That feed is just for patrons. You could be one of them. Go to patreon.com/playvolutionhq or click the link in the show description to learn more. Childcare Bar and Grill Podcast. Jeff Johnson here with Annie Friday and Lisa Murphy. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Annie?
Good. Very good.
So I got a topic to throw at you. It's in the last episode we recorded with Annie, she mentioned systems, and I've been thinking a lot about systems lately. I thought maybe we could dig into that a little bit ago. One I read about a month ago was the system for doing surgery in India. Now, if you're going to have cancer surgery, for example, in India, the cost is orders of magnitude lower than it is in the United States, and the quality of the surgery is about the same. And that's because they've paid attention at a number of their hospitals into the system they use for doing surgery. Instead of having the one super expert surgeon do the whole surgery, they have people that are coming up that are learning that aren't as skilled do the beginning part of the surgery. So if, say, it's a heart surgery, somebody else opens the chest and does everything, and then the fancy guy or fancy lady surgeon, lady surgeons, that's what they call such a dick. The more experienced skilled surgeon comes in and does the hard part. And then somebody else comes in and closes up and everything. And so the number of surgeries that experienced skilled surgeon can do in a day is doubled or tripled or whatever. And so it's a much more efficient. And then those people that are doing the pre and post parts are there and able to observe the experienced surgeon. And so then their skills get boosted by that experience. And I thought that was really kind of amazing as far as a systems approach to things. And I really think we, as a early learning professional, could benefit from paying more attention to our systems, because a lot of times it seems like we're just individual programs and the profession as a whole are just kind of flying by the seat of our pants instead of implementing systems for dealing with different kinds of things. Is that worth a discussion, or should we just press delete and start over on something else?
Annie, you got something?
I like talking systems. I don't know. I can tell you, Jeff, we brought you out to Jackson, Wyoming when I was out there by the Systems of Education, which was something we created that linked preschools to elementary schools, which hadn't been done before. And all the other supporting bodies, like the library and the literacy center and the people who connected to education, it brought us all to one table to talk about how we could do better for all of our kids.
Yeah, just implemented those. Oh, that was at the library, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful. My gosh, that's a beautiful library.
That library's gorgeous, right? That's a town with some money to spend.
Yeah. If you're looking for a library, go to the library in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. My gosh. So Lisa, do you?
I'm wondering at what point. I mean, my last kind of brush with really systems thinking was in my undergrad. It's been a while because. Talking a lot about family systems therapy and Bronfron Brenner and systems. That's what I think of. What you just said, though, this is when does systeming or that kind of thinking, when does that become like, what's the word I'm looking for? When you farm stuff out, when you not delegate, but when you're like,
Oh, subcontracting.
Yeah, like that. Like, yeah. You know, because when you were talking, Jeff, my head about the surgeon, I'm like, oh my God, that makes perfect sense. So then my brain started to see it like in a childcare setting. And I had like teacher A come in for circle time, then teacher B come in for art, and then teacher C. Like I saw it in my head more like that, but I don't think that that's really what you mean.
Well,
I would get concerned that's how it might be interpreted.
And I don't know. Well, first, I don't know what I mean. I throw it out there to talk about. But wouldn't you rather have
outsourced
story time done for a group of kids by somebody who loves doing story time and is really, really good at it than somebody who's phoning it in and doesn't feel comfortable?
Well, 100%.
And so if that person rotated from room to room to come in after lunch and do story time at staggered times throughout the day, I think that gives kids a better story time experience. And so that
I do too. And I think when we explore like the model that that Annie's doing, like the smaller group model mm-hmm. of kids, it's happening organically, right? It's not like every day at 10 o'clock. Miss Lisa comes in and interrupts whatever we were doing because she does story time well, but yet you're still interrupting, right?
Yeah.
But in that one room schoolhouse kind of feel to it, you know, I could be doing good story time like all frickin' day for the kids to rotate in and out, so to speak, too. So I think there's room for my brain to make peace with the fact that that kind of system thinking doesn't necessarily mean compartmentalized.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think it's just thinking about, and again, it's kind of agile systems that are flexible to meet the needs of situations. I mean, imagine an early learning setting where the experienced, skilled teacher who was in the classroom because she was experienced and skilled and wanted to teach didn't have to deal with things like cleaning up after lunch. There was somebody that came in to do that and handle the paperwork and those kind of things so that teacher could actually be with the children and all that. I mean, I don't want to call it busy work, but that's a lot of what it often is done by support staff, those kind of things. But I think it goes deeper than that when we start thinking about our systems. I mean, take biting. If a program had a system in place for how they would, for lack of a better term, troubleshoot biting in a classroom. Okay, so Kimmy is biting, and first we're gonna take out this observation form and see if we can figure out when it's happening or where it's happening or what's triggering it and that kind of stuff, and just use kind of systematic approaches to dealing with those different things instead of just pulling our hair out and running around like the world is on fire every time a 2-year-old bites as if it's never happened before.
And I think that does happen a little bit in I was recently in a larger center, like 5-6 classroom center, and there was an extra administrator in the room, and I just picked up on the fact like that he was kind of shadowing one kid, and then later it was explained like, oh yeah, it was exactly that, a biter. And so that was his role, just to support that child. And they are lucky that they have that extra administrator on hand. They're a Reggio-inspired program, so I think his title is pedagogista. And that's his, you know, his specialty as the pedagogista. Not only can I set up great provocations, I can shadow and attend to this child who needs some support with their biting.
That's a job I could never have because I couldn't pronounce it. But I think when we start thinking in systems, it's things like, you know, what's our system for onboarding parents into the program? And how can we make that a system that is not only efficient, but effective of helping parents understand what's going on in this program? And so when we start thinking about, you know, what are the steps involved in to get to this outcome we want to have, I think we end up being a little bit more effective along the lines. One I've talked about on the show before is last November, I decided I needed to get my butt to the home gym on a regular basis because having it was pretty much worthless if it wasn't getting used. And so the system I put in place was every day I had to go into the room and spend at least a little bit of time, I had to, you know, touch a dumbbell. And because one thing you're trying to do is you're trying to build new habits, right? If you're going to make working out a routine. And so that worked until about May when I fell away for about 6 weeks during this whole pandemic thing. And then I put myself back on the schedule. And then I made it a little bit more rigid because I was pretty good at the habit of getting in there every day. I put in a program. I've set some goals for weights I want to be able to move independently of machinery by the end of this year. And it really is. It's really incremental. It's like a 1-3% increase every week. And because I'm an old guy, I built in a system that requires a little bit more rest time. So yoga and stretching on the days that I'm not lifting. And over the last 6 weeks I've been back on it, I've had probably a 15-20% increase in the weight I'm moving and each one of the exercises I'm picking. And so just those kinds of systemic thinking about the way you approach things, whether it's how you deal with biting or how you choose to put food into your body, are all kind of valuable things when we can pull back and dissect them.
Agreed.
I guess this is going to be a real short episode, I guess.
Well, and it sounds like you're talking about some processes and systems, right? There's two pieces there, like the surgeons in India. That sounds more of like they've created a process that it really works well for them. And I kind of am thinking the system, and obviously now we're just mincing words, but the system, yeah, can be like the greater body. Like I always think of systems kind of have to be a big thing, right? Like the part of why I said in the last episode that, yeah, exactly. Like systems take longer to change because there's more people involved and there's, you know, so it's easy, like you said, Lisa, it happens a little bit more organically in smaller programs because there's, you know, like I'll open my school and have two other people professionally to talk to about what the system looks like. That's easy to do when there's three of you, when you're in a large center.
You're still though going to be a small system within a larger system. So
right.
The change and the policy changes or the philosophical changes are going to be a little easier, of course, to adapt and implement in your subsystem of the larger, if you think, educational system to, you know. And so there still is that interfacing between them, but like for your guys right here and right now, it's going to be a system that's probably a lot more aligned with what we know should be happening in an educational setting.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I tend to use, I mean, for me, systems and process are pretty much synonyms. I mean, things like if there wasn't a hook by the door for my keys to hang on, I wouldn't know where my keys are. And so I've implemented that system that when I walk in, the keys go on the hook. When I walk out, the keys come with me. And when the keys are with me, they're in my left front pocket. I mean,
hold on, I'm going to make a leap here.
Okay.
So because of that, I could argue that because you're not spending brainless amounts of time or mindless amounts of time looking for your freaking keys, you're able then to channel that same amount of brain power or thinking power or creativity, whatever you want to call it, to the stuff that really warrants your attention. So the leap here I'm making is almost the freedom within the structure that I talk a lot about in the Being Child-Centered book. The idea that because it's consistent here, whether you call it just being consistent or a process or a system, when the kids come to school, they come in, they take off their coat, they put it in their cubby. If they want to take off their shoes, they put it in the shoebox. And so then they can go about the business of being free because they're not needing to worry about that peripheral shit because it's always the same.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, absolutely. And Lisa Murphy, you are a creature of systems. What is your system for getting your three huge totes off of the luggage conveyor at the airport and getting them safely with you to the hotel and then to the gig the next morning? Lisa Murphy has very exacting and specific ways she does all that kind of stuff, right, Lisa Murphy?
I do. How to set up at a gig too. And so then it's I don't even have to think about it because it's just so set in place and it's consistent and it works and don't touch my stuff.
I have seen Lisa Murphy after gigs almost punch people in the throat when they offer to help her clean up, because her system is very precious to her. And I feel very special that there have been a few times where I've actually gotten to help. Yes. Although I would, you know, me, I'm lazy and would.
You did not. Tasha did. Tasha helped you watch.
I mean, I say I helped because I drove her there. So I mean,
I would even go so far, Jeff, as to say, and sorry, Annie, I'm kind of talking around you right this second, but my system during COVID got totally, I don't even know what the right word is,
fucked
totally. And it was like, and that's exactly what it was. It was like systematic chaos. And it took a while to figure out what it was all about. Like, why am I so off? Like, why am I feeling like I'm literally just walking around the first floor of the house doing, what is that about? And it was because my system totally became non-existent overnight.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I feel that deeply as a parent of young children. Like, my self-care system was reliant on them at some point leaving the house, and all of a sudden nobody was leaving the house. Nobody was leaving my side. No one was leaving my bed every night. Like, they were the same way, right? They're lost. And instead of walking around the house with nothing to do, they crawl into my bed and lay on top of me, right? Like, that's their way of being like, oh, my system's out of whack here.
So did you just put them on leashes and tie them out in the backyard for an hour a day, or how'd you solve it?
We've a fenced in backyard, so I don't need the leash.
They don't even need the leash.
The door is locked.
Lock them in the backyard. Perfect.
Pablo told me that I needed to just start driving to the airport, even though I had to just turn around and come home, just so that I would feel like I was had some sense of familiarity.
I actually did that with school. Our school's close enough that we walk to school. I walk my son to school every morning, and I just realized I missed that walk. I walked to school every morning, even though I wasn't dropping anybody off and nobody was there.
Yeah. Yeah. And we get reliant on these systems / processes, whatever we're going to call them. Because I mean, we're creatures of habit, right? And so I think most of us have these things in our lives. If we pull back and look at them, I think when it comes to being more effective, we just need to maybe spend time on a meta level thinking about them a little bit more, and how can I make this system a little bit more efficient? And I think that's the real key here, because a lot of people think systems, they think rigidity. And I mean, when you talk about bureaucracies and these giant systems, there's a lot of that there. But harking back to our last episode with Annie, the whole agile piece of this is an important part too. You need to be flexible with the system and change it when it needs changing.
And I do think you have to, I think being agile requires you to be honest, right? Like, and I think a lot of times, especially within the world of education, we're really nice people. We're teachers, especially like we said in the Midwest, we're really nice. And we don't want to say to the teacher's aide, I can, or we say things like, I can wash the tables, even though there's a reason why that person is not a teacher. There's a reason why that person doesn't have the same pay level or the same responsibility list, but we can't be honest. Or I don't know if it's, you know, knowing really where we are, and then being able to say like, yeah, you're the assistant surgeon, you cut them open, I do the surgery.
Yeah.
You wipe the tables. I don't know. What do? What am I as a teacher? I facilitate the conversation. I don't know.
I do the play stuff.
Well, and you might not even know the extent of the systems that you might actually have in place until they're gone.
Right. That's true. Very true.
Yeah.
We all found that out, right?
Like, I did not, I had no, and I can say this honestly, I had no conscious awareness at all as to how my life revolved around the system of being on the road, going out and doing gigs. I had no awareness of that at all. I mean, I knew clearly, but to the extent, I had nothing, had no idea.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, why am I flailing around here feeling like a fish out of water? And that brought up some interesting conversation about, you know, I didn't realize just how much I defined my life by my job. You know it, Mm-hmm. But then you're like, oh my God, I just didn't have that level of awareness.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of times we have our daily systems. I mean, my system was thrown off this morning because the regular routine is wake up, go to the bathroom, start the coffee for Tasha, take the dogs out. Except today, when I came out of the bathroom, Tasha and the dogs were gone because she decided to take the dogs out. Now, it was not the way we do things for the dogs. And so they were kind of jerks, apparently, when she took them out. And also, I came out and was ready and the dogs weren't there. And so I'm like, well, now what do I do with myself? And so we get really tied into those systems. But sometimes when we have goals or deadlines we need to meet, we put these temporary systems into place. I'm sure when you're working on a book, you have a system for here's the deadline and here I gotta count back this many days and I gotta get this much done by this date. And so we build those kind of systems for things, and they can be either helpful or then I guess sometimes we can build systems for ourselves that are kind of dysfunctional, huh?
Oh, sure.
And
like being on the road 300 days a year and realizing that your self-care came from sitting on an airplane, and then now you're at home and not on an airplane and you're like, oh shit, that's still a need that needs to get some attention, but I don't
have read a book
space here right now for that.
Let's be honest, Lisa, the hardest part with you is you had to get your own cocktails instead of having somebody bring them to you.
Oh yeah, is that it?
you were used to that was happening at the airport, that was happening on the plane, that was happening in the hotel bar, and now you had to get up and walk across the room and pour your own wine.
God damn it.
But you're right. I don't think we always know how much the systems that we're involved with define us, whether it's work, whether it's where your hook is for your key. But yeah, then something shifts. And right now we all collectively felt it in this pandemic, but I had the same experience when we moved 4 years ago and I had been the director of a school and seeing 300 people a day and was used to like being the cruise director. And then all of a sudden I'm home with an infant, newborn, and toddler looking at me like, what's next, lady? What you got next? I'm like, I just want to go back to seeing people.
I need some humans. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if there's a takeaway from this other than that, you know, paying attention to the systems we create in our programs can be beneficial, going back and evaluating them periodically and figuring out how they can be tweaked to be more effective is probably a good idea. Paying attention to the systems that exist in our lives, either by accident or on purpose, is probably a good idea because it can help us again make tweaks that can help us get through the day a little bit better. I mean I know plenty of people that are in these very dysfunctional systems with their spouse or significant other that, I mean, okay, she drinks too much and then we have an argument and then she passes out and then I clean up after. I mean, that stuff happens and people get locked into those systems and it's really hard to break away from those things unless
they're familiar.
Because we're so close to them that we need to pull back and kind of evaluate them. And so again, it's something we talk about on the show a lot, is that it's that need for a little bit of distance and a little bit of reflection.
And I think the flexibility, going back to the agility piece as well, just to the specific key example, like if you found that all of a sudden, for whatever reason, you were turning to the left instead of to the right to hang your key up, you know, that might be an organic opportunity to be like, huh, same system, but needs a little bit of an adjustment, right? You know, you don't need to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but maybe it's time for the key hook to be on the other side, right? Instead of insisting that because the key hook has always been on the left side, that it has to stay on the left side.
Yeah.
And working with kids, and you get a different set of kids, you get a different, like, you have to be agile, right? And that's why learning has to be agile, because every child learns differently and learns different things differently, right? Like, you may be a really great visual learner when it comes to your artistic skills, but you may need auditory learning when it's, I don't know, whatever. But, sure. You know, we all have those multiple intelligences that come up in different ways.
I just thought about this. I think there are some people that are are maybe system adverse for whatever reason. I mean, we all know that person who loses their keys all the time, to stick with the keys example. And you may make the suggestion, if you put your keys the same place every time you put your keys down, then you would know where your keys were. And then they continue to choose to not do that, maybe because you suggested it, but maybe because that's just the chaos that they prefer. And so, I mean, that exists.
I feel attacked. Like I'm in a therapy session. I didn't want to say anything when you brought up the key hook as the example.
I never
know where my keys are. At an early childhood conference a few years ago, I even entered the silent auction to win one of those little things you put on your keys, and I have that. I know where that is. It's still in the drawer. I put it in. No, it's like an electronic thing that will track my keys for me.
Technology.
You know, like right now, there's one set of keys to my car that is somewhere in a bag, in a pocket, and we'll find out soon. We always do, but it's been about 6 months since I've seen that set of keys. So yeah, I am system averse.
Did I trigger you? I'm sorry.
a trigger warning in the beginning of the episode.
No, but I mean, and I mean, I think we've all got some little thing like that we just kind of buck against the system just for whatever reason.
I was also going to say that, thinking about the school piece of it, when Annie, you talked about different kids every year, right? Maybe a different room every year. So you have to have that flexibility. But the other thing I started thinking about that is that the fewer control needs you have, the fewer systems, maybe in theory, right? Because it could be the same consistent system that applies, doesn't matter how old they are, because that framework is so all encompassing that it doesn't need to change every year. But if I have 49 rules on the wall that I'm trying to enforce, then that would cause me a lot more stress.
Yeah, yeah.
That was, I mean, the half-baked thought about if they were broader and not so individual, that maybe it might be easier.
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole thing about controlling the environment so you don't have to control the kids is all about creating a system, or probably a collection of systems in that space that allow you to step back and give up the control.
Yeah.
Hey, we made an episode.
If I had my keys in front of me, I would wiggle them so that
you don't know where they are.
No, I don't know where mine are, so I could never.
Well, Annie, I hope you find the keys before the pandemic ends so you can actually get out and about in the world. This here has been the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. We appreciate you listening. Numbers have looked great through. Pandemics are apparently good for podcasts. That's real nice. So
and sourdough bread.
I don't know about that, but I'll take your word for it. Have you been making a lot of sourdough bread?
I have not, but apparently it's a thing right now.
I did it. Yeah. I tried it. Not good. No. I'm not a systems person. I'm not a baker.
Well, you got time. You can probably, I mean, you don't know where your keys are. You can't go anyplace. You got to send your husband and kids to the grocery store to get you fixing them, and then you can keep making sourdough bread. We will be back soon with another episode. And if you've made sourdough bread and have too much and want to get rid of it, message me and you can mail it to me and I will eat it, even though I gave up carbs. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.
Oh.